I'm Emily Thede, author of The Last Fenestra, coming in 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the query trenches.
You're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches...
break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
The fairy wing keeps falling down in my face.
Aww.
People, yeah, I have a fairy wing for my pop filter.
Pop filter. Oh, wait. Are we actually recording this episode?
I mean, we are recording this episode. I figure you can find, yeah, 2 minutes of banter out of this whole
I love it
thingy badoodle.
So much. I love this.
Because it's Emily and Anna happy hour.
Happy hour. That's absolutely going in.
Oh,
what if
totally.
That's where we start with us singing happy hour?
I feel like that's fair. I mean, we usually record in the morning, and when you suggested, or when I suggested, I don't know, when one of us suggested recording in the afternoon, I was like, well, then we should just do it, you know, happy hour style and bring our drinks. So that's
it
what we're
is.
Doing.
Not to like, we're not looking for, you know, sponsors, but Emily, what is your happy hour beverage of choice?
Oh, it is a crisp New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. It's the Crossings, one of my favorite, a great like spring, summer crisp beverage.
Ooh,
how about you?
Look at you go. You're so fancy.
I told
Steven, he went to the grocery store and I was like, will you please just pick me up a case of Keller Weiss?
Oh.
And that's my beer of choice.
Yeah.
Thanks, TJ. I'm just going to say that. He'll cackle in his car hearing that. But then I was like, pick me up just any the 19 crimes or whatever. I was like, please pick me up any 19 crimes wine. I don't give a crap.
Yeah, I'm a weird person with like the glasses. I need to have the right glass for the right thing. Like if I show up at a restaurant, what are restaurants? If I show up at a restaurant when I can do such things and they give me like wine in a juice cup, it just ruins my night.
Who has ever done that to you?
Well, so it's actually, there's a theater. We have Alamo Draft House, which is perfect. But then we have another theater that opened up first that has food and drinks. And I guess for like whatever like safety reason, they don't want you to knock it over and break it. So they give you like a juice glass. So you get like a short juice glass or like a, you know, like the 18-ounce juice glass if you want to get two if you want to get two glasses of wine to last you through the whole movie. And I'm always just like, this is so depressing. I can't even handle it. Give me a plastic wine glass. Like that's acceptable. But
right.
A juice glass, it's got to be the right, like, it's the same thing if you give you a martini. Like, some restaurants will do martinis, but they'll do them in, like a lowball glass. And I'm like, no, that's not acceptable.
That's
it has to have the skinny stem and it has to be obnoxiously spillable. That's just,
this is a conversation we need to have with Lindsay Ely as well.
Oh,
she's into cocktails and things. So
we need to review
this with her.
You can do that.
I'm sure she has opinions.
But yeah, so that's me. I need things to be in their correct glasses. Mm. There's
I'll
no good reason
that.
For it. Yeah.
Whenever we have a friend, TJ, again, hello, sir, who when he comes to our house, he will pour coffee in the mug. And then just to be a smart aleck and also a thoughtful person, he's like, I don't want to dirty another dish. He'll drink water out of his coffee mug. And I'm like, I need you to not do that, sir. I need you to get an actual glass.
Well, I'm so weird that I love like iced mochas and iced lattes from Starbucks. But when I make them at home, I get sad if I don't have the right cup. So I just save all my little Starbucks cups. I mean, it's recycling. But so there have been times where I like posted a picture to Instagram and someone's like, did you go to Starbucks? And I'm like, no, actually, that's my own Starbucks plastic cup that I'm using.
That's good, though.
Yeah, it's good for the environment. It's probably terrible for me. Probably rewashing glasses or cups that aren't supposed to be reusable is probably not great. But there's microplastics in the ocean.
That's all right.
What you gonna do? Sorry, this went dark.
This one.
We're all made of plastic. It's fine.
It's all. Welcome to Basic Pitches. It's really
Welcome
sad.
Welcome to
in here.
Basic Pitches.
This is happy.
Climate
hour.
Control and pollution episode. No.
This is not. More like it's sad not. Feels hour. Which is a great transition to what we're going to talk
it
about.
Is.
I found it.
A transition. Yes. Oh,
I'm
I didn't even think about the fact that we grabbed drinks for the talking about agent list.
Oh. What is that gif of, oh my gosh.
Is it Betty White with the giant wine glass?
No, it's the one where he's sitting on the bed and the bed, he's like crying and the bed is vibrant and it's like spilling all over. That's going to be me in a second. Oh, my
gosh. I was thinking of the Betty White with like the wine glass. It's like as big as her whole body. Tipping that one up. Yes. So, yeah. So today we're going to talk about good agents, bad agents, how you kind of design your query list and red flags and all that stuff, which is such a good topic. Because it's like so hard to know. It's so hard to know when you're getting started.
I feel like it's one of those topics that you could do multiple, like you could do episode on each thing.
I could do like a semester long class on it, but we'll just do kind of the simple stuff, kind of introductory, but then we'll also talk about sort of agent relationships and just, you know, I've obviously only had one agent and you are still working on it, but getting closer every minute, but you've been around these blocks. These streets, you know, you've heard the stories. I think, have a good idea of what it is that you are looking for and hoping for. So,
and in case it didn't like end up in the banter that I edited, I just opened my query tracker, which is something that I will suggest.
Yes, I suggest it too. Yes,
It's a paid service, right?
It is, but it's like $20 a year or something. Oh, it's pretty affordable.
It's pretty peanuts, like in comparison to things like Publisher's Marketplace.
I think there is still, there's a free version. You just can't have like multiple projects and you can't, there's certain things you can't see. So,
I opened Query Tracker and I saw like all three of the manuscripts I've queried before this one. And it was like, oh no, I don't want these feelings again.
It's rough. I saved mine for a while. I actually taught a class on querying last year. The year before, I don't know. Time has no meaning. But so I like signed up again for Query Tracker so I could show it to people. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered all the cool stuff you can do where you can like see how many Query Tracker people have sent queries to certain agents and stuff.
Yes.
So I was the creepy weirdo that was like trying to figure out how many queries my agent got in her first month, trying to figure out like, how did I do? Like how many people were out there? Right. A lot. There were a lot. Like, wow.
No, and that was the thing I remember. And I learned, it took me like my second or third one to learn not to look at that list because it was like,
the list. Oh, yeah. Because, for anyone who doesn't know, on Query Tracker, you can see your query in like a list of all the query, just the dates. It just says like, you know, on this date, you pick an agent or whatever, and it says on this date, like, they got, like, an 80,000 word YA fantasy and a 90,000 word YA sci-fi. So you can just kind of see where you are on the list, but you don't know who the other people are. And it'll show whether they've been rejected or made a request or got an offer. And so you can kind of just, like, watch that little green dot get closer to you. And for me, it always would get closer, and then it would skip over me. And I was like, what is happening? I'm convinced it's the maybe pile. But it is a brutal place to be where you're like, wait, did mine just disappear into the ether? Did they not look at it? Was it so bad that they refused to respond? Like, what's happening?
Right.
Oh, it's brutal.
I hate it. And I'm about to be there.
I know. I hate it. But it is nice to see, like, it also tells you, like, who responds quickly, who responds slowly, who doesn't respond at all. The in-depth metrics where you can see, like, how many queries each agent gets, which is a different thing, like, I had to hunt around for, is fascinating, too, because, some of them get a lot. Like, a lot. Mm-hmm. And Query Tracker is not everybody. It's just the people that use Query Tracker.
That's the thing is, if you don't know Query Tracker, it's only based on the people who, have a Query Tracker subscription it's and also, like, upload their data that I queried this person. So take that, account for the other people who are querying that agent. Cut yourself some slack, okay?
Like when you see some agents getting thousands a month, it's like, oh, okay, that's intense,
right?
Yes, but so,
I don't know how to start tackling this. So good agents versus, I guess, like, I don't know. I feel strange about calling things. I think it's the teacher in me of calling things good and bad.
Well, and I think that's where we start. Because because this isn't really an instructional episode. It's more of a deep, deep thoughts on agents.
Yes.
I know when I started, the one thing I wanted to see was how many big book deals they had, how many big authors, how many big, you know, books had they sold. Because that was kind of the only thing I understood. But I was still at the point where I was like, what is the big five? What's a good deal? Like, I don't know. So I would log on to Publishers Marketplace and just see, like, who had the most deals. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. now I realize it's all a lot more complicated than that, because sometimes the agents who have the most deals might also have almost entirely deals that are digital or at smaller houses, which can be fine. But if you're aiming for a big five book deal, that's not mm-hmm. as useful information as it seems. Like, if you just look at the numbers. Also, things like newer agents that are just getting started aren't going to have a lot of deals to report because they haven't been doing it very long. But that doesn't necessarily tell you the same thing as their potential to sell it. So,
because that's the situation with your agent.
Yes. Right? Yeah. My agent, I queried my agent the day she opened. So we've talked about a little bit on previous episodes, but I had a friend at the agency, which is a fantastic agency. It's a small agency, just meaning that it only has a few agents. Sarah Davies at Greenhouse is an absolute phenom. I mean, the number of books she sold all by herself for a year when she was on her own with this agency is amazing. And so when she decided to take on a new agent, I knew enough about her work ethic and her reputation. And just from knowing that people who worked with her as clients, I knew what kind of standards she would have for an agent that she was bringing on. And my agent was, at the time, was a senior editor at Penguin Random House. And so I had a friend that said, hey, you know, my agent's agency is bringing on a new agent. This is a lot of agents in one sentence. So you should go check out her manuscript wish list on Twitter, you know, because I think this could be a really great opportunity for you. I was just getting ready to start querying. And so my agent, Chelsea, had posted a list of things that she was going to be looking for when she opened up. And I read through this list and I was like, that's my book. Like, that's my book. Like, I had a really good feeling about it, which is a rare and beautiful emotion in querying, because usually querying doesn't feel that good. But so when she opened for queries, yeah, I queried her immediately. And all the other agents on my query list were, you know, people that had a solid track record of sales. And yet, so there was a little bit of a leap of faith, but at the same time, I knew that coming from being a senior editor, I knew she had the connections. I could tell from talking to her that she had the drive and the determination. She had the mentorship of an experienced agent at a strong agency. So while someone else might have said, oh, but, you know, this agent doesn't have any sales yet, I had to look at it and say, well, of course she doesn't. I'm the first person that she's made an offer to. How could she possibly have sales? Because it's just me.
Exactly.
And since then, so, you know, I signed with her. She's really only signed about maybe 8 clients in about the past year and a half or so, because she's building her list slowly and carefully. But since she took her first client on submission, a little over a year ago, I think she's got 8 deals already, and something like 4 of them are 6-figure deals. So she's lived up to every hope and dream and expectation I could have had. But I do think it is important to remember that numbers are important, but numbers only tell part of the story.
Right. And I think that's the thing, that thinking about good and bad agents, I think it's more, and correct me if I'm wrong or if I'm naive about this, it feels to me like part of it is more about finding someone you respect and someone that works the way you work, like works similarly to you or what you're looking for in an agent. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I'm hearing, thinking about you and hearing you talk about Chelsea, is, you know, she has this experience, you know, she's going to do the things that you value in that kind of relationship. And I think that's what makes, in one aspect, definitely not all, but like in one aspect, a good agent for you personally. I think you're looking at you personally rather than how much money has this person been able to accrue for books or whatever. Yeah. That's not a marker.
Well,
the marker is working for you.
It's so important too. And I know this is so hard for querying writers, because you get in this mindset where, honestly, I think a lot of us almost forget that the point of an agent is to help you get a book deal, and it almost turns into a validation thing. We want to get an agent offer because it will tell us that we are good at what we're doing. And that is an understandable feeling, but it is really important to remember that you are getting an agent because they are going to be a business partner. And so you need to decide what it is that you want. And that can mean setting your pie in the sky dreams, and then setting your realistic dreams, but then also figuring out, like, where is your cutoff? So if you're dreaming of, you know, $1 million book deal at a big 5 house being a lead title, like, go ahead and dream big. Like, that's awesome. If you know, okay, but I'd also be happy with a smaller deal at a big 5 house, versus I'd also be happy with just anything that gets my book published.
Yeah.
Like, know where your threshold is, mm-hmm, because the fact is there are certain agents that are great at pitching smaller presses, at independent presses, and there are certain agents that have a lot of connections at the big five houses, the kind of agents that are what we would call sharks, the ones that are making those big deals. And if really, if your goal is just to find a readership for your book, get it printed, and you it'd be great to be a big rock star author, but that's not what you need, well, then okay. But that changes your query list, and it expands it in certain ways. But if you are saying, no, absolutely, I want to be a big five author, I want to have my, you know, my book on bookstore shelves, then think about that when you're looking at agents, because there are some who might not have the connections or the experience to get you there. And that's not bad. It's just, what do you need? What do you want? Yeah.
Right. That's such an, I've never ever thought of it that way, but it's such a nice feeling, because I think sometimes we get into that discussion, and this is like a little side trail, of we get into the discussion of like whether you want to be traditionally published or small press published or self-published or whatever, and almost as if one is more worthy than the other. Yeah, and no. That's not it. You just have to find, you have to, like you said, think of what you want, what you want to accomplish, and then that is going to kind of guide who you query. And it's okay to want different things. It's okay to want. Oh my gosh, that's absolutely so fascinating.
Well, and different agents have different, I mean, there are agents out there that have really strong relationships with some really wonderful smaller presses. You're not going to get a big advance. You're not going to get the same marketing push, but they know their audience. They know how to market those books. And if you're writing, say, like a quieter book or a quirky book or a book that has that sort of literary or independent feel to it, then some of these super sharky big five agents might be a terrible fit for you, because they might say, look, let's make this more marketable. Let's make this more mainstream, more commercial. Mm-hmm. And if that's not what you want, if you're much more of the like artistic vision, I'm fine with selling fewer copies as long as I get to be true to what it is that I'm trying to do, then maybe you want an agent that specializes in smaller presses, independent presses. Whereas, again, like I said, if you want that big five publishing deal, then you have to look carefully to see which agents have the connections or the potential to make the connections to make those deals. Because I think we forget, too, that agents, their job is not just to, like, post it on a bulletin board. Like, agents should, this is one thing I will say, what good versus bad. I'm drawing a line here. A good agent should be targeting their submissions to editors based on some sort of information. That is what an agent does. They're almost a matchmaker in a way. They are looking at your manuscript. They're looking at the editors that they know of, they've spoken to, they've researched, they have relationships with, and they are saying, okay, this book would appeal to this editor. So I am going to pitch it to this editor, and I'm going to pitch it this way because I know the things that are going to get them interested. I mean, it's almost like querying, but like turned up a notch, because they actually do know the person they're sending it to, and they're pitching it very specifically. And so, as much as you'd like to think, well, anyone can just wake up one day and decide to be an agent, they can't, because they don't know those editors. They don't have to have been around forever, but if they, you know, they should ideally be at an agency that provides mentorship. And part of the mentorship is making those connections and introductions. Maybe that's not fair. Maybe it's not the way it should be. But the fact is, we live in a world where thousands and thousands and thousands of people write books, and only so many can be published, so there's a bottleneck. And to get through that bottleneck, a big part of that is agents matchmaking between books and editors.
Exactly. Exactly. I had a thought, and now it's gone.
Oh, sorry.
I'm thinking, I'm like, is this the wine? Is this the happy hour?
Is it the fact that I'm like, can talk for 20 minutes straight?
No. I think I think the episode will come out before this one, but the episode we did with KL, we talked about how agents, I think sometimes we talk about them as a conglomerate, but they are not. They are individuals, and individuals have individual strengths, individual lists that they're curating. And that means they only know, not only know, but they are familiar with and have a business relationship with only specific editors. So, I mean, that helps you kind of curate your list, your query list a little bit too, is thinking about what type of deals does this person make? And like you said, the frequency of deals, I think that idea of, are they quiet? Have they not made a deal? And like, you know,
yeah.
are they?
And are then they some don't list it. I don't know why. Some don't list their deals. And I'm like, what are you doing? This is not helpful at all.
Show people you work in.
Seriously. But if you follow a bunch of agents, you know, on Twitter, occasionally you'll see, I've seen a couple times where agents have basically said, like, hey, editors, tell us what you want. Like, make a list. Like, a few houses have even sort of made spreadsheets. Mm-hmm. That are, these are the editors, these are all the things that they're really interested in, these are the genres they're looking for, and provide it to agents. And I've seen writers say, well, why don't they send that to us? And I'm like, because it's not useful to us. Like, the agents, again, it's the matchmaking. And so if the agents have more information about what editors are looking for, what gets them excited, then they can do their job better. And I think so much of it, too, and again, I know this is frustrating for people because it's so intangible, but I would have had no idea how to figure out an editor's brand if I tried. Mm-hmm. And yet, since I signed with my editor, I now feel like I do understand what her brand is. And it's not something that's easily defined. You know, we're talking about books from Red, White, and Royal Blue to Within These Wicked Walls comes out this year, which is a gothic YA fantasy romance. To, you know, so we have, like, we have contemporary books that are funny. We have, you know, dark YA fantasy. Like, we have all these things. And so you could look at her list and be like, she's all over the place, but she isn't. If you actually read her books, I think there is a certain combination of emotions and darkness and humor and, like, kind of mashing things together that now I get it, but I would never be able to explain it to someone. But a good agent kind of knows, okay, they've read all those books. They're starting to see those commonalities. And so when they're looking at their clients' books, they're saying, oh, this is a book I really feel like would land really well with this person.
Right.
So it's a complicated job. And
No, I think that's where the ye olde advice of find your favorite books and flip to the back of the acknowledgments and see who their agent is.
Totally.
That's ye olde advice for a reason. Because those are the people, like, that agent enjoys this type of book, and it's the type of book you like to write, and there's a connection there. And this agent will know how to sell your book if it is similar in voice or in, world building or whatever. I think be careful of if your book is, like,
too similar.
You know, Hunger Games adjacent.
Yeah.
Probably that agent doesn't want to sell another Hunger Games adjacent
book. That's what I'd say. Look at the agent. So see who the agent is and then look at their agency.
Yes.
I will say is I do think when you do things like Publishers Marketplace, which is expensive, it's like $25 a month, but you can sign up for it, you know, print out all the stuff you want and then cancel it. Looking at agency deal makers list to see which agencies are selling a lot of books in your category, because that can be a great way to find an agency with a strong reputation, a strong sales record, and maybe that agent who represented your favorite author already has, you know, 30 best-selling authors on their list, and that's great, but that might mean, one, that they're not looking that hard because they're already doing deals constantly, or that they have a lot of great books that you love, but there's too many of them that are too much like you. But hey, look, they have that brand new agent assistant who's working with them closely and building their list, and, you know, a new hungry agent that has good mentorship is gold because they have time to spend on you and they want it. So,
and I think that's the thing that I had a couple years ago had really struggled with, people saying, like, look for newer agents. And especially now, I think there was a discussion on Twitter recently about how there's so many agents now. Mm-hmm. And it was the idea of how do you sort through the, you know, I guess what we refer to as schmagents. How do you navigate the newer agents that aren't really, you know.
Yeah. And I'd say
find
an agent. And if you're looking for newer agents or whatever, look at the agency.
Exactly.
You can have new agent at an established agency, or you can have a new agency established by an established agent.
Exactly.
But if you have a new agent at a new agency, we're not trying to be harsh against those agents, but the fact is, if they have not worked in the industry, anyone can put up a website and say, I'm a literary agent. That's just it's not an industry that has a lot of controls like that. And just because someone wants to sell books doesn't mean they can. I would say a general rule of thumb is if you look at an agency's website and the only books they have sold or claim to have sold are their own, like literally they are the authors.
Uh-huh.
That's a red flag because you do sometimes have writers that are like, I'm going to call myself an agent and say that like this is my book, and it gets a little tricky there. So
right.
But yeah. Ooh. Oh, Writer Beware is a fantastic website. Look at that one if you're researching agents because there are agent scams. They've had a couple recently that were, I mean, websites with all stock photos. Like they were all stock photos or they were those digitally created photos. Yeah, they had one a couple weeks ago. It was brand new agency website and like the language, like the phrasing was weird. And and a big thing too is if they're asking you for money, run away. But yeah, it was one of those agencies that was like, oh yeah, we just charged $10 for reading fees. But look at all our shiny agent pictures. And they were all not real people. It was, it was terrible.
No. Awful. Run away. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, another day we'll have to have a conversation about shady pay-to-publish publishing houses too. But we'll do that later.
Another time.
Good rule of thumb, people. Money flows down. Yes. The authors should not be paying agents. Authors should not be paying publishers. If you are, then you at least need to be aware of what you're doing. Because that's not publishing the way that it's supposed to be working. That is something like a Vanity Press. That is basically glorified self-publishing, which is if you want to do it, awesome. But don't get conned into it by someone who makes it seem like they're offering you some great, publishing deal. You just have to pay the $5,000 to do all the work. Like, no.
Right.
That's when they are fleecing you. So run away from that.
Ugh.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about Publishers Marketplace, Query Tracker.
Yes. I think the other thing is to look, this is hit or miss. This is once you've kind of done your research on, or once you see something that catches your eye, but there is Manuscript Wishlist.
Yes.
That is a really excellent resource. So once you've kind of like found an agent or found a couple agents, you can go on Manuscript Wishlist, which is fantastic, a great resource.
It curated, is fantastic.
Updated often. You can search your agent up or you can search by categories. You can search by age. You can search by genre and by age category, and you can find those agents and they kind of upload it with a little bit more than what you can typically find on their website.
Mm-hmm.
I find that like on the agency website, it's usually like a paragraph that's like, I represent young good adult books. Fantasy yeah. and adult and I'm looking to build that list. And you're like, that doesn't help. My least
favorite is what are you looking for? I love high quality books of all sorts. I'm like, this is not helpful. This is not helpful at all.
That's not helpful. That doesn't do it.
Stop it. Don't do that.
So Manuscript Wishlist is really cool. I find it's really cool because it helps you kind of almost find somebody who you think you can jive with or would jive with your book, because if they fill it out to its, entirety, which they don't have to, but they can put their favorite books, their favorite movies, their favorite TV shows. I found somebody recently. I found a couple agents who love reality TV baking shows. And nice. I was like, oh, hi.
Yeah.
Hi, what's up?
Oh, hi.
Right. And then after I've done the research to see if this is like somebody who would jive with me and like what I want for my writing career, now they belong on the query list.
Totally.
So I totally suggest that website. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great website. Yeah, and I think, a lot of the things we talk about too with picking agents comes down to stuff that you can't really know early. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to at least think about it in terms of whether you want someone who is a handholder versus a shark versus, whatever. So when we say shark, we usually mean someone is, they're willing to, if they smell blood in the water, they're going to go after that deal. They are going to be strategic and mercenary to get you the biggest deal, the best deal and all that stuff, which for some people is exactly what they want. For other people, it can mean that those agents might be a little less like emotionally supportive or editorial or whatever it is. Not always.
Right.
But it's just kind of important to have an idea of what you're looking for so that if you do get an offer or when you do get an offer, you know whether it's a good fit. And I know it's the hardest thing in the world to think of getting an offer and not taking it. But that's also why I would encourage people to try not to query someone that you really, really don't think that you would work well with. I know it's tempting just to get that yes, but I know for me, I got to the point by the time I queried TLF, my agent list was so short. It was only 18 people because I had, I'd done so much research. I did have a sense of what I was looking for and what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And there were other people that I could potentially have worked with okay. And, and maybe I would have extended my list after that. But I basically told myself, look, I'm going to start with these people right here because at least I know with this list, if I get an offer from anyone, I'd be happy to take it. Yeah. Whereas if I had thrown my net really wide, I might have been stuck in a position where I got one offer from someone that I really wasn't sure about. And I didn't think I was strong enough to say no to an offer, even if I didn't have a good feeling about it.
Right.
You know, so
I think that's a good trick, too, is when you're researching, once you've done enough research, or if you haven't done enough research, ask yourself, if they offer today, would they lead me where I want to go?
Yeah.
Would I be happy to work with this person? Or is there something in the back of my head that's saying, I don't think so.
Yeah.
And trust your gut at that point. I tell my students this all the time. Once we've like working through answering questions is once you've done the work, trust your gut. Like that 50-50 shot, trust your gut. Go with your gut.
And know yourself. If you know
that
you want to send out more queries because you want to see how your query is working and, you know, you're willing to listen to some of these people, maybe they'd make a good sell, you know, if they decided to offer, maybe they could talk you into it. But know yourself. If you know you're someone who's like, nope, I know what I want, and if I get an offer and this agent isn't what I want, I will say no. I have that strong will. Good for you. I knew I did not.
Oh, yeah. Same.
I knew the bird in the bush thing. I would have taken that bird in the hand. So I basically kind of cut myself off and said, nope, you are only allowed to query people that you know you're not going to have hesitations about.
For sure.
Yeah. And that's just a personal preference thing. But they say no agent is better than a bad agent. And it's really actually true. I know it's so horrible to hear, but it really is.
Like, I want to people to know that I do not have an agent, and I am about, like I said, for the millionth time this episode, I am about to query, and even I know no agent is better than a bad agent. Like,
you get that validation for a minute, but the fact is you've worked really hard on this book, on your books, and a bad agent who spams your book out to 100 editors and is blacklisted because they don't follow protocol. Like, we've all heard these stories of agents who don't do the research. They don't do the work. They send out your manuscript to a million people. Editors get annoyed and stop looking at their submissions. And then your book's dead. You can't save it at that point. And I don't know. I'd rather trunk a book and write a new one and hope that I can get an agent with that one and then loop back to the old book than have a book be just like murdered by an agent that isn't ethical. Yeah.
That's the thing. If you query the people that you want to query, the agents you want to query, and it doesn't, you know, it gets passes, as we talk about, not rejections, which I love that change in terminology. Yeah. It gets passes, then you can just put it on the shelf. It's not dead. You can always go edit it again and, you know, revitalize it. But I think once there's something that goes on, once it's been killed by someone else.
Once it's gone on submission, it's a lot harder to bring it back zombie-like, which we'll loop back to at the end of the episode.
Right.
So I think it's important to remember also that agents don't just sell your book. Well, some of them do. But if you want an editorial agent, which I did, then an editorial agent is going to be in some ways your partner in revising, in creating, in shaping your story. I queried TLF feeling really good about it. And I still do. Like, I can still look back at that draft and be like, yeah, that was solid. It was a solid book. But my agent pushed me to make it even better to the point where that revision process was a little taxing, but it saved me so much work once I actually, you know, I think it helped me get a faster deal. It helped me get a bigger deal. And it saved me from a lot of revising after the deal. Where some authors would be frustrated at having to do that much revision. You know, they would say, is my book acceptable? Then send it out tomorrow. So thinking about how editorial you want your agent to be, I also say that agents are like, they're like therapist, lawyer, editor, salespeople. Like, it's such a weird job because they need to make sure that they're looking out for your legal interests. They're making sure you're not signing things you shouldn't sign or giving away rights that you shouldn't give away. I mean, it's a weird job. There's a lot of stuff involved in it. So
no. I can't imagine. Like, oh my gosh, I'd be terrible. And this isn't like, you know, beating my chest, but I am such an empathetic person.
Yes.
My empathy is through the roof. I can't watch movies without crying. I can't, like, anytime something happens, whenever somebody, like, I am that person that when somebody comes at me and yells at me, I'm like, oh, I wonder what's going on. Are they okay? Like, I just think of agent jobs and I can't, it almost reminds me a little bit of teaching.
Yeah.
In the sense of you have so many hats to wear.
Oh, yeah. And you're going from being this sort of strategic mercenary negotiator, you know, you're pitching stuff, you're choosing how to put a book on submission to make sure it gets the best offers at the best time. And then you also have these frail, delicate, emotional artist flowers. Right. That are freaking out because it's like, you know, that you've been on submission for 2 days and their life is over and you have to be like, no, right. No, it's okay. Breathe, breathe, breathe. Like, it's just, it right. is a very specific set of skills and bless oh. them.
Right.
It's a lot. So just be aware if you do, if you know you're someone who needs handholding and you're going after the sharkiest of shark agents, then just be aware that you might need to find a friend who can hold your hand because uh-huh. different agents do mm-hmm. different things. And it's really hard to know. I know that.
Yeah.
So much of it is, I don't even want to say whisper network because we're not talking about problematic things. We're just talking about styles. But if you do get an offer, then like call those references, ask them the tough questions, you know, say how long does it take for them to get back to you? Does it take 6 months for them to read your revision? Does it take 2 months? How do you get in contact with your agent? Do you call them? Do you phone them? Like, these are important questions because it is a business partnership. And if you can't work well together, it's not going to get you where you need to go.
Absolutely. I was going to talk about the questions, the essential questions you mm-hmm. ask once you get an offer, because I feel like that is where you truly start to figure it out. Because there was a point earlier where I was thinking about definitely knowing a good agent from a bad agent, I guess in my perspective, is if they are very closed to relaying information. Yeah. So, hey, what are some clients that I can contact to talk about, mm-hmm. you know, this decision? If they don't want to provide contacts, red flag.
Yeah.
If they don't want to answer your questions that you have for them, red flag. You know, those are kind of some big things.
Yeah, and most I feel like agents should have, you know, clients that they're willing to put you in contact with. But also, you know, if you reach out to an author who is represented by an agent, well, I will preface this by saying, in general, don't reach out privately to an author to ask about their agent if you're just getting ready to query, which is not meant to be harsh. It's just that, like, I mean, my agent literally gets, I think, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of queries a year. I can't DM with everyone. And I'm not going to get in a private conversation about a private, you know, professional working relationship with someone I have no contact with. But if someone uh-huh. messaged me and says, hey, I got an offer from your agent, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts. Most authors are very willing to do so. Mm-hmm. I would just say if you get an offer and even if the agent puts you in contact with some of their writers but not others – I think it's generally okay to reach out to other authors and just say, hey, would you be willing to have a conversation with me? If not, I totally understand. Mm-hmm. Like, put the ball mm-hmm. in their court there. But, I mean, for me, if someone messages me and they're like, I got an offer from your agent, I'll be like, yay, let's talk about it. yeah, I've had people DM me, actually, and say, like, hey, I just don't want to be weird, but, like, I just want to ask you because I'm curious whether you actually like your agent as much as you pretend you do on Twitter. And I was like, no, I really do. I really do like her that much, but it's just funny to me that, you know, right. people know that Twitter is not always the full story, but it actually is. I do love my agent. She's wonderful.
I love that. And I think, like, Twitter not being the full story, I think it is a good resource to use. I was also thinking of hashtag MSWL mm-hmm. For learning how to, like, make your, like, for making your query list. You can find people who are searching. I think Beth Phelan, mm-hmm. If I'm saying that correctly, she just did an MSWL.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they open to queries, they let you know when they're about to open. Mm-hmm. They let you know, some of them, not all of them, they let you know what they're looking for in their list. And that's a valuable resource. And then from there, you can kind of go in the thing of looking at their clients mm-hmm. and just kind of like skim and see. Like,
I used to do a search on Twitter. I would search for like the word rep, like REP. And then I would put the agent's handle and I would see and I would search for people. Yes. And I could see who was represented by that agent, and that was a great snapshot into it. One thing I will say when it comes to Twitter, too, is, you know, you hear this a lot on Twitter, is just because an agent is really popular on Twitter doesn't necessarily mean they are, one, mm-hmm. the best agent, or two, the best agent for you. Mm-hmm. There are so many agents that I follow on Twitter, some of whom have actually, like, finally followed me back, which still feels, like, weirdly validating, even as an author that has a book deal. And I realized, like, I really like these people. Like, they are great. Like, I've had agents from agencies that I used to just, like, stare at with stars in my eyes that I can now DM and be like, hey, congrats on your new book deal. That sounds great. And it kind of blows my mind that I can do that. And some of them are wonderful, lovely people. But now I realize I probably wouldn't have been a good fit. And some of these are agents that I queried in the past. And now I look at it and I go, okay, right. I actually do understand why they didn't want my book. We right. have such different styles, but I can still like them as a person. But just be mm-hmm. aware that liking someone as a person and liking someone as a business partner aren't necessarily the same thing. And some agents exactly. don't do Twitter.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Or they do it, but they don't really post. And that's fine. Like, that's not uh-huh. a bad thing at all, because Twitter is not actually where books get sold.
No.
Despite what we think.
Gosh. Oh, there's so much. I just keep thinking about baby Anna getting on Twitter, trying to get in Pitch Wars for the first time, getting into writing, and just how much misinformation or thinking there was.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, poor Anna.
But what it's tough because we want to tell people things, but so much of it isn't factual. It's just a feeling. Yeah. You know, it's not like there can be a magical secret list of agent information, because someone might say, oh yeah, I don't like so-and-so. She's such a whatever, whatever. And someone yep. else might be like, that's what I want. I want someone that is tough and hard-nosed. Yes. It's personal preference. You know, it's like, imagine if everyone you knew in your social life, someone made a list of like who is the best human. That's not how that works.
No.
You know, I have two really close friends and who both signed with agents around the same time. And one signed with a very like blunt, direct, very editorial, critical, but in a constructive way, kind of sharky agent. And another one signed with an agent who is just like, you know, the kind of agent that's like, oh, I'm crying on Twitter because I read this book and it just hurt my heart feels, you know, and also sells a ton of books, but in just like a warm, fuzzy, cozy, like, you know, one of them is hanging out with their agent at book events and just like, they're just like new best friends. And then the other one is out uh-huh. there being like, oh, yeah, no, I would never like have a social interaction with my agent, but she gets the job done. And they're both completely happy. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, can I smush those two together? And I thought, that's impossible. And then I found my agent and I was like, no, that's exactly like that. Yeah. Like warm and fuzzy shark.
Yeah. So. From all you've told me, it sounds like a fantastic relationship.
It's a good mix. Yeah. But some people want to be able to DM, you know, their agent on Twitter 20 times a day with memes and GIFs. And that's fine. But some agents yep. aren't. That's not their style. You know, other people yep. say, I don't care. Just sell my book and get me $1 billion. And again, mm-hmm. like that's not right or wrong. It's just different styles. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's tricky. Oof, do we want to talk about books?
It's such a deep, deep topic.
It is. Like, it's intense.
Ugh. I was talking to my therapist about writing, which has been a journey.
Which is something we should all say.
We should all say that.
All writers should get therapists.
It was fantastic. It was nice. It was kind of cathartic to explain the whole process. So I was explaining to her. She's been like, so you finished your revision. Mm-hmm. How are people liking it? What is going on? And I told her I was going to start querying. And she was like, okay, what is that process like? And I kind of told her. And she's like, oh. She's like, where do you find the list of agents to query? And I was like, no, honey. And then she finally, when I explained it to her, she goes, this is kind of like a second job. And I was like,
oh, yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a like you have to do the research and you have to do the digging and you have to.
It's so hard. Yeah, it's so hard. I know. Awful. I remember personalizing stuff and spending like 10 hours to find one article to be like,
oh,
because you like penguins. And I will tell people, don't do that. It's okay. It is okay to just be like, you know, I love your author
just
list.
Tackled in this.
Yeah, paper. Like it's okay. Personalization is great. If you don't have it, don't do it. Like it's right. fine. It's oh, fine. My gosh. Okay. Don't spend 10 hours digging. I mean, yeah, you know, like I dug so deep and I was like, oh, they said 10 years ago that they liked this author and I love that author. And I mentioned it and it was, you know, I got rejected 2 hours later and I was like, okay, glad I wasted 10 hours there.
Right on this one reference that you probably don't even remember, agent.
Exactly. They were like, I did an interview 10 years ago. What are you talking about? yeah.
Oh, before I forget, this whole episode was inspired by an email by Allison. Allison L in our email. Thank you for sending us an email, Allison. Their email was super sweet. I'm going to go ahead and continue reading it because it's fantastic and I love these emails and they make me feel good. Talk about validation. She said, hello, Anna and Emily. Thank you so much for continuing to release weekly episodes of Two Basic Pitches. I am not a podcast person, but I'm listening into you two religiously each week.
Yay!
My phone now automatically starts up Two Basic Pitches whenever I'm in the car. Whoop, whoop. I very much appreciate you two sharing your insight and wisdom in writing and publishing and life in general. And then they went on to request that we talk about two topics, which we'll probably talk about. The one topic they suggested was voice, which happy hour with a glass of wine is not the time to talk about finding voice.
We will loop back to that after we've done a little preparation.
Come back when the wine is out of the system. And then the other one is bad agents versus good agents. And they said, thank you again for spending your valuable creative time on this podcast.
We love it. Aww, it's so fun. So I know. My mom said, I don't know how you have time to do all this podcasting. And I was like, I just show up and talk to Anna for an hour. It's not that hard.
I do have something to fill these last couple minutes, though, that Sweet. Is not trunked novels, which I don't know where we got that
question. I swear this was a question. We're not great at communicating. We'll talk about that later. To be continued.
Yeah, we'll talk about trunked manuscripts another day because
we got them. We got them. We got a bookstore worth of trunked manuscripts.
They're hanging out there. I could open in my own indie bookseller.
Seriously.
Trash novels. So, Emily, on a previous episode, we asked for people to email us suggested titles for your second book.
I'm ready. All right. What do we have? What
Which,
we have?
By the way, we're still looking for suggested titles because this one made me laugh so much that I cried. Like, I had to take a deep breath and not. I responded to this person with all caps, ha, 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 which I'm sure is obnoxious in their face, and I apologize. But Kendra P. says, hello, Anna and Emily. I love the podcast so much. Thank you both for being so warm and fun to listen to while also being informative. That said, I cannot rest until I tell you my idea for the Last Fenestra sequel's title. Drum roll.
I'm ready.
The penultimate payday.
We're going to have to edit all of this later. Okay, I'm going to send that to my editor. It's perfect.
Jokes aside, thank you for all the laughs and advice. Best can
wonderful
Kendra.
I'm gonna Kendra. Work. I'm gonna work more pasta into the sequel. It's just really hard because a lot of this no spoilers. They don't necessarily have access to ovens, but they can still cook pasta. Pasta is easily transportable.
Please make penne in the sequel.
I love your accent in there for Kendra. Some penne.
Please. Or at least sneak in the word penultimate.
I can make that happen. I managed to work defenestration in the first book, so I can get penultimate in the second one. All right, Anna, what are your goals for this week?
Oh no, I forgot about goals. So
query letter.
Yeah. I hate them. No, sorry. What was the question? No. I have to write a query letter, which I did, and then I sent it to you, and it's garbage, and you looked at it, I think.
I looked at it. I gave a – I kind of, like, did a rewrite. It's not perfect, but
cool. We'll see. Yeah. I'm going to look at that and rewrite it, and then I'm going to make people read my first chapter critically and make sure
it looks – Oh, man, I like your first chapter. That's a good first chapter.
It's a really good.
It's a really good first chapter.
Honestly.
Really good first chapter.
Hi, thanks. So I might not do that. I might just trust my gut.
Trust your gut. Don't mess with it too much. It's good. It's good.
Okay, good. So query letter. And then I think I have a couple of things that I need to tidy up at the end. Just some things that I need to shift. But we'll just say query letter.
Yeah.
We'll not say actually start querying because that seems very scary.
Yeah. That's good. Well, I think my goal for this week would be to actually give you feedback because I keep being like, I have some feedback, but I haven't given it to you. It's not much, but I will get that to you and we will have a chat about it at some point. That's what we're going to do. And then other than that, I'm dragging myself through Camp NaNoWriMo. That's how it feels every time I write. Camp NaNoWriMo, which is not going quote unquote well. But I have reminded myself that, yes, words can, in fact, be written. Not good, not enough, but words can be written. So that was my goal, and that's what I'm doing.
Hooray. Yeah,
just plugging
along.
You're
getting your clay. That's all you're doing. Getting my clay.
It is some very sloppy clay, but that's okay.
It's okay. It's just, okay. Yeah. I've always heard, and I've said this a couple times, like I've always heard that the sophomore novel is the hardest.
Yeah. I didn't think it would be that bad because, I don't know, because I like this world and I love these characters, but it's just, yeah, it's just a lot. It's a lot knowing that like it's already obligated to someone. Right. And figuring out what that kind of looks like in terms of, like, when do I show stuff to my agent or my editor? And do I have to? Because I don't want anyone to see. And, like, bless you. You're always like, send me scenes. I'm like, there are no scenes.
But send
they're just rambly bits. No, give see, you think you know. I would send it to you and you would be like, Emily, did you click the wrong button? Because this is not story.
No. Listen, I am dying of thirst for your book babies, and there are things that I know that happen in the sequel that I'm like, hi, I just need a crumb. Just send me a crumb.
Crumbs is about all I have.
That will send me a crumb. I'll take a crumb. Let's go.
It will have to be a here it is, just let's never talk about it again, because if you can't even give feedback, you'd be like, so just walking for 12 pages? Is this where I put it on pages, Twitter? Just on walking?
Our podcast that you did send me that one scene?
Yes, I did.
So you can send me anything. Oh,
the one scene that I was like, I don't know if this scene's ever going to see the light of day, but now I have a couple of bad influences in my ear saying, send it to your editor. Send it to your editor. I'm like,
Do it.
We'll see. I got to bury it in the rest of the book, though. I can't just send it in my hands.
Do it.
Oh, scandalous. So well, good. On that note.
on that note, I think that wraps up this episode.
I think it does. This was fun.
Hooray. Cheers to happy hour.
Cheers. Oh, I want to clink something, pitches. But we're not together. Clink.
I know, right?
I'm like, banging on my microphone. It's weird
to be like, here's this glass coming at your computer screen.
Doing it anyway. Such a jerk.
Bye. Everyone, thank you again for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate it. If you liked what you heard, we would super appreciate if you also went to iTunes and liked and subscribed to the show. It really helps us out. It helps us reach a broader audience. As always, add The Last Fenestra on Goodreads. It's going to be great. You're going to want it in your hands. I'll see you next time. Bye, Pitches.